Reading The Unknown Reality by Jane Roberts, a Seth book, volume 2. Okay, this is session 731, and it is really important, and it might take a couple of times listening to it to completely assimilate everything that Seth is saying. And he is, this whole time, he's been leading us up to the nine families of consciousness, and you gotta really pay attention to completely understand what he's saying here. So Seth starts by saying your present idea of identity is maintained only because you grant as valid such small aspects of your own reality. In other words, your accepted concepts of selfhood would disappear if you ever allowed any significant subjective experience to intrude. Quote, the absent self, end quote, the absent or unknown self is the portion of your own existence that you do not ordinarily perceive or accept, though there is within you a longing for it. Much of unknown reality is involved with the breaking up of theories that have been long accepted, but that prevent you from perceiving the powerful nature of those absent portions of the self. As you focus upon certain details from a larger field of physical reality, so then you focus upon only the small portion of yourself that you consider quote unquote real. You carry within you, however, the deep knowledge of experience that in your terms would be prior, yet in your cells and your own deeper mind, such information is current. Selfhood overspills with great luxurious outcroppings. Yet you jealously guard against such creativity. To a certain extent, you do carry the knowledge of your forefathers within your cell's chromosomes, which present a pattern that is not rigid but flexible, one that in codified fashion endows you with the subjective living experience of those who, in your terms, have gone before. As Rupert recently suspected, some very old cultures have been aware of this. While being independent individuals, their members also identified with their ancestors to some extent, accepting them as portions of their selfhoods. This does not mean that the individual self was less, but was more aware of its own reality. A completely different kind of focus was presented, in which the ancestors were understood to contribute to the quote-unquote new experience of the living, one in which the physically focused consciousness clearly saw itself as perceiving the world for itself, but also for all of those who had gone before, while realizing that in those terms, he or she would contribute as well as the generations past. The animals were also accepted in this natural philosophy of selfhood, as the individual plainly saw the living quality of consciousness. The characteristics of the animals were understood to continue, quote unquote, life, adding their qualities to the experience of the self in a new way. The human body would be used in Earth's great husbandry, as from it, dying and decaying new forms would arise. This was a give and take, in which, for instance, a jungle neighborhood was truly home, and all was a portion of the self psychically, spiritually, and physically. Let those who will laugh at tales of spirits turning into the trees. A simplistic theory, yet a symbolic statement in such societies. The dead were buried at home in the same close territory to form in later times the very composition of the ground upon which religions grew. Again, your limited concepts of selfhood make what I am saying difficult for you to perceive. I am not saying, for example, that the living consciousness of each individual returned to the earth literally, but that the physical material permeated and stamped with that consciousness did and does. Again, even the cells retain knowledge of all of their affiliations. In physical terms, the consciousness that you understand is based upon this. Selfhood is poorer when it does not at least intuitively understand this heritage. Those intimate realizations, however, had to be counterbalanced in line with certain purposes set by your species, and even for that matter, momentarily set aside so that other abilities and characteristics could emerge. The species' sense of curiosity would not allow it to stay in any home territory for long, and so the sense of intimacy was purposely broken. It would become highly important again, however, when the planet was populated extensively as it is now. Only the original feeling of home area has to be extended over the face of the Earth. The quote-unquote absent portions of the self are ready to emerge. The other, to you probable, lines of consciousness can now come into play. These different lines of focus will each show you other aspects of your own reality, as individuals and as a species. I said once that no knowledge exists outside of consciousness. In those terms, neutral data are not transferred through the chromosomes. Consciousness passes on information through quote-unquote living vehicles. Whether physically materialized or not, knowledge is possessed by consciousness. It is always quote-unquote individualized, though not necessarily in your terms. The information carried by the chromosomes is not general, but highly specific. It is codified data, itself alive, that contains within it the essence of specific ancestral experience. Biologically, you do indeed carry within you, then, the memories of your particular ancestors. These form a partial basis for your subjective and physical existence and provide the needed support for it. Since one portion of your heritage is physical in those terms, those memories can be translated again back into emotional and psychological events, though usually they are not in your society. To that extent, the so-called past experience of your ancestors and of your species is concurrent with your own, biologically speaking. That is but one line, however, covered by the chromosomes. You have, quote, another line, end quote, of existence that also serves as a support for the one that you presently recognize. It includes other interweaving physical relationships that bind you with all others upon your planet at the same adjacent level of time. That is, to some extent or another, you are related to all of those alive upon the planet. You are time contemporaries. You will have a far closer relationship with some than with others. Some will be your counterparts. These may or may not be closer to you than family relationships, but psychically speaking, they will share a certain kind of history with you. You will also be connected through the physical framework of the Earth, in the large give and take of its space-time scheme. A third line supporting your selfhood as you think of it is the reincarnational one. This is somewhat like the ancestral line, and there are also reflections in the genes and chromosomes undetected by your scientists. The ancestral and reincarnational lines merge to some extent to form what you think of as your genetic patterns ahead of time, so to speak. Before this life, you chose what you wished from those two main areas. Reincarnational experience is also transmitted then, and can be retranslated from a biological code imprint into emotional awareness. Again, however, as you are not your parents or your ancestors, you are not your quote reincarnational selves, end quote. Here, also ideas of time hamper you, for I must explain all of this in temporal terms. Since time is simultaneous at other levels, your ancestors knew of your birth, though they died centuries ago in recognized continuity. The same applies to reincarnational existences that you think of as occurring in the past. You cannot say that your ancestors, like some strange plants, were growing toward what you are, or that you are the sum of their experiences. They are themselves. You cannot say that you are the sum of your past reincarnational lives either, and for the same reasons. You cut off the knowledge of yourself, and so divisions seem to occur. You are somewhat like a plant that recognizes only one of its leaves at a time. A leaf feels its deeper reality as a part of the plant and adds to its own sense of continuity, even to its own sense of individuality. But you often pretend that you are some odd dangling leaf with no roots, growing without a plant to support you. All of the leaves now growing on this plant could be thought of as counterparts of each other, each alive and individual in one time, each contributing yet facing in different directions. As one leaf falls, another takes its place until next year the whole plant, still living, will have a completely new set of leaves, future reincarnational selves of this batch. You are not plants, but the analogy is a simple one, and if you will forgive me, overall, it holds water. There is a constant interaction in the plant between its parts that you do not perceive. The leaves now present are biologically valid, interrelating in your terms. Yet, in time terms, each leaf is also aware of the past history of the plant, and biologically they spring up from that quote unquote past. Each leaf seeks to express its leafhood as fully as possible. Leaves take in sun, which helps the plant itself grow. The development of the leaves, then, is very important to the plant's own existence. The cells of the plant are kept in contact with the environment through the leaves' experiences, and future probabilities are always taken into consideration. The smallest calculations involving light and dark are known. The life of the plant and its leaves cannot be separated. The plant has its own quote-unquote ideas of itself, in which each of its leaves has its part. Yet each leaf has the latent capacities of the whole plant. Root one, for instance, and a new plant will grow. Selves, SELVES, selves have far greater freedom than leaves. but they can also root themselves if they choose, and they do. Reincarnational selves are like leaves that have left the plant, choosing a new medium of existence. In this analogy, the dropped leaves of the physical plant have fulfilled their own purposes to themselves as leaves and to the plant. These selves, however, dropping from one branch of time, root themselves in another time and become new selves from which others will sprout. The larger self then seeds itself in time. In this process, no identity is lost and no identity is the same, yet all are interrelated. So you can theoretically expand your consciousness to include the knowledge of your past lives, though those lives were yours and not yours. They have a common root, as next year's leaves have a common root with the leaves now of this plant. Such knowledge, however, would automatically affect those past lives. Ideas of cause and effect can hold you back here because it seems to you that the leaves of next year come as an effect caused by this year's leaves. To the plant and its innate creative pattern, however, all of its manifestations are one, an expression of itself, each portion different. The knowledge of its quote-unquote future leaves as potential patterns exist now. The same applies to the psyche. In that greater realm of reality, there is creative interplay and interrelationships between all aspects of selfhood. All right, that's the end of the session. There's some session notes, and the book is getting really interesting. We are getting so close to those families of consciousness. You guys don't even know if you haven't heard this or even if you haven't heard it for a while. We're very close. I think we're two sessions away where Seth starts to discuss them. But session note one, you guys can read if you like. Skipping note two and going to note three. Okay, it says Seth packed a lot of information into the short 689th session for volume one. He discussed the innumerable experiments of consciousness with animal man and man animal forms, the great communication between man and animal in ancient times, and the deep rapport of both with their natural heritage, psychic and biological blueprints, and cellular precognition, the growth of man's ego consciousness, the beginning of our God concepts and mythology, and more. So I will put that link so that you guys can hopefully review that from Tim Hart Hart's channel. And note number four says, in volume one, see the 687th session at 10:45 when Seth said, quote, biologically the man knows he has come from the earth. Some of his cells have been the cells of animals, and the animal knows he will look out through a man's eyes. End quote. If you haven't heard that one, definitely go to that session. And I'm skipping note five. Note number six is in reference to when Seth said in the session, the species' sense of curiosity would not allow it to stay in any home territory for long. Rob's saying, for volume one, see the material from 10:49 to 11:22 for the 684th session. Okay, so note number seven, I'm not reading the whole thing, but it starts by saying, Seth evidently referred to the material he gave on the conscious attributes of information for chapter three of Personal Reality. So you'll definitely want to see that and or hear that. Where in this session, Seth had said, I once said that no knowledge exists outside of consciousness. And Rob pulled out at random. He found in the 18th session Seth's delivery of this information. It says, quote, "As you have probably supposed by now, there is consciousness in everything. Visible or invisible to you, each fragment of the universe has a consciousness of its own. Pain and pleasure, the strongest aspects of all consciousnesses, are experienced by every fragment according to its degree. Differentiation is, of course, various, and it is in the degree of differentiation that consciousnesses are different." End quote by Seth. Skipping note 8, going to note 9. When Seth said a third line supporting your selfhood is the reincarnational one, Rob states, when Seth mentions reincarnation now, I usually think of a certain delivery in his volume 1. After 10:45 in the 683rd session, see the paragraph of material beginning with this phrase, quote, "Reincarnation simply represents probabilities in a time context," end quote. So if you have the book and you want to go right to that, that would be really easy to do. Otherwise, you can go to the session and just listen to Tim Hart Hart's volume 1 on that one. And number 10, again from the 18th session, Rob inserts that Seth excerpt that says, quote, "In drawing up his list of so-called natural laws, I have said in the 16th session that man decided that what appeared to be cause and effect to him was therefore a natural law of the universe. Not only do these so-called laws, which are not laws, vary according to where you are in the universe, they also vary according to what you are in the universe. Therefore, your tree recognizes a human being, though it does not see the human being in your terms. To a tree, the laws are simply different. And if a tree wrote its laws of the universe, then you would know how different they are." End quote. And also from the 521st session, chapter 4 of Seth Speaks, Seth said, "The word quote unquote result, you see, automatically infers cause and effect, the cause happening before the effect. And this is simply one small example of the strength of such distortions and of the inherent difficulties involved with verbal thought, for it always implies a single line delineation." End quote. So that's the end of the session completely, you guys. That was a really thought-provoking session, and they're just going to keep getting better. So definitely keep looking back or subscribe with the bell and get these videos. This is the next session, what it's going to be about, some of the things. It's beginning the discussion of the psychic families, families of consciousness, and it will just progressively go into more detail. And right here, Rob's saying that the next session is on your relationship with your counterparts, the importance of play and spontaneity, a list of the families of consciousness. My candle is out. I need to get another candle. But anyways, thank you for watching, and definitely share this information, and let me know if you have any questions.